This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from five-star app Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle, along with my co-host today, Ariel Garten. Join us each week as we introduce you to authors, experts, and thought leaders who share their stories on how meditation and mindfulness practices have the power to change our lives. You can check out the Meditation Studio app in the App Store, where you'll find over 500 meditations on everything from sleep, stress, and anxiety to happiness, motivation, confidence, and so much more, all designed to inspire you to solve the big and little challenges we face in life and to be your best self every day. It's like having a little inspirational coach in your pocket. And we just launched two beautiful new sleep collections with music for you and your kiddos. Check it out. Today, join Muse co-founder, neuroscientist, brainiac, and Untangle co-host, Ariel Garten, as she goes inside the head of her amazing guests.
Thanks, Patricia.
Hello, I'm Ariel, and I'll be your guide as we go inside the head of some of the world's most extraordinary brain scientists, psychologists, meditators, those who are skilled in the mental arts. And we're going to learn both from their cutting-edge work and their own human experience, how our brains work, how to optimize them, and how to manage the crazy in all of our minds.
Today, we're going to get inside the head of somebody really interesting. His name is Casey Fenton. Now, the name Casey Fenton may not be familiar to you, but the word couch surfing may be. So couch surfing, kind of search back into the annals of the internet, and what do you find? You find really the birth of the sharing economy. Every time you jump into an Uber or sleep in somebody else's bed in an Airbnb, that's because of the work that couch surfing did, beginning the sort of ground level of how we trust one another through the internet. So my guest, Casey Fenton, was the founder of Couchsurfing. He's now working on an amazing project. We'll hear all about ego hacking. And I would like to welcome all of you inside the head of Casey Fenton. Welcome.
Thanks, Ariel. It's a pleasure to be here today. Really excited to be here because I've been following you and following the company from the very beginning. I got one of the original Muse headsets and I got to play around with it and use it over the course of time. And it's been something that's been really, really interesting and fun to use.
Oh, that's awesome. And so I would like everybody to learn a little bit more about your story and how Couchsurfing came to be.
Sure. So imagine there I was many, many years ago, a very shy person. I grew up in a small town in Maine, and I wasn't sure if I might just live and die in that small town. I didn't know how I would escape. And I came up with this idea that if I could just to start traveling, maybe I would learn something. And I noticed that when I was traveling, though, it was really hard for me to try to meet locals. I wasn't the kind of person who would go to a bar and just say, hey, how's it going? Let's talk and have an interesting conversation. That sounded like the most scary idea ever. And as a computer programmer, I would always think, there has to be some computer code that could solve this problem. But this, in this case, the problem of disconnection the problem of exploring and feeling alone. And so I started to say, what would happen if I could stay on a stranger's couch? And I registered this domain Couchsurfing. And then I went on a cheap trip to Iceland. And I thought, I got to email some people and maybe I can stay on their couch. So I stumbled across the University of Iceland student directory. And I was able to, you have to type in a name to get a student's full name and email address. So back then, their security is a little bit more lax. So, of course, I typed in the only Icelandic name I knew, which was Bjork. And up came a bunch of Bjork Stevensdotters and, you know, different last names. And I figured out that in Iceland and other places in Scandinavia, the last name is the father's first name. So it would be Stephen's daughter, you know, Johan's daughter or something like this. So I was able to figure out, oh, Johan or Stephen, that's another name. And I started plugging all these names and I finally had 1,500 names and email addresses, put them in a database, and then wrote some PHP code to loop through them all and mail everybody and say, hi, I'm Casey. I'm coming to Iceland. Would you host me? Could I stay on your couch? And ultimately, it was like a minimal viable product. It was like I was sending them my profile saying, would you trust me? Am I interesting? Can I stay with you? And by the end of a couple of days, I had between 50 and 100 people. About 7% of the people I met, emailed said, yes, come stay on my couch and we'll drink vodka under the stars at my grandfather's cabin in the wilderness, something like that. And then I had the opposite problem. I had to figure out who of all these cool Icelanders to go spend time with, and had the most amazing time hanging out with all kinds of people there. And I got on the plane thinking, you know, how could I not travel like this every time? And thus began my transition from being a very shy, one of the shyest people in my class, just very, very, very quiet, you know, kind of antisocial or not really, just afraid to talk to people, really. And I switched schools a couple times when I was young. So that made it even harder, felt even more lonely. And so as a computer programmer, I was able to transition from that, oh my God, do people even want to talk to me? To, wow, people actually do care about me and I could get off a plane anywhere in the world and maybe I'll be okay. People will care for me.
Wow. What a wonderful feeling.
That was a pretty great feeling, yeah.
So this was so amazing. Obviously, you wanted to share this with other people.
Absolutely. I didn't know if other people would actually want to do this. The feedback I was getting is mostly, that's completely insane. You can't do that. It's too dangerous.
That's amazing. And I think if you asked most people right now, would you be willing to go and sleep on a stranger's couch in a strange country? They would say, no, that's crazy. But you say, would you go on Airbnb and book somebody else's unit? They'd say, oh yeah, I did that last week. And you're literally right, going and sleeping in a stranger's bed, in some right, case, in a shared environment when they're still in the apartment with you.
Yeah. So in the early days, it was just that people didn't have a way to understand that if you have the right indicators online, that sure, you can go on a date with somebody that you don't know. You could get in a car with somebody you don't know. It's all about, you know, what did previous people who have encountered that person say? If they all said, yeah, this is good, then you feel safe.
So this is something really interesting about humanity. And a lot of what we talk about in Untangle is, you know, meditation, how we quiet our minds, how we become better humans. Ooh. And when we think about this model of, you know, an ideal humanity, it's one in which people are able to trust one another and we are all good people. What have you learned about, you know, models of humanity through the creation of this?
Well, I've learned a lot about humans. I've learned a lot about myself. There's something to be said to be able to iterate, to go and meet new people time and time again. I had one person kind of walk up to me in Paris and he said, you know, I used to be the most awkward person ever, but now I'm cool. I said, well, tell me more about that. Why are you cool? So, well, you know, every night I had new people over and I'd make dinner for them and I just get to talk to them. I get to practice being cool. And after a while, I'll start to learn people love me. They think I'm actually funny. I'm a totally new person. Thank you so much. It's like, that's pretty great. It was kind of like my experience as well, a little different. And so when you think of a model for humanity, a lot of times I think we get stuck in our bubble. And so if we were told that we're one way or another, it's hard to get out of that way of being. We're going into some of the topic of ego hacking right now. Like, and part of ego hacking is this idea, and one of the core ideas is we become what other people say we are for social cohesion. Whatever they want us to be effectively, we become that. It's like you become the five people you hang out with, something like that. So the model for humanity here is that where we it's hard to break out of that mold of who you are and become that person maybe you want to be or discover even who you want to be. And the couchsurfing certainly allows people to try different, you know, outfits on and say, okay, how does it feel to be this person or this person? You know, let me change my personality about in this way. And then people say, oh, I really like that about you. Now you have people reinforcing that that's actually who you are, that they like that. So you become more of that.
So I think so many of us are familiar with the situation where, you know, you're, for example, in a family structure, you'll be one way with your friends and you'll feel great. And then you'll go home to your family and you'll feel terrible because they're still treating you like the child that they still think you are.
Right. Right.
So in so many of these situations, you become fixed with who you are. And it's only when you're able to try yourself in a new situation, try who you could become, that those changes that reflect who you really are. This is really you in all those scenarios.
Right.
But they're given space.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And that's, I think a lot of people have had that experience. But and then we want to break out. We want to, you know, experiment with our personality or an identity. But how do you do that? Especially, I mean, if your friends and your family are telling you or implying, or you at least believe that they are, that you are a certain person and you can't change, or that that's just not open to you, you won't really change. I think my understanding, and we're getting into the ego hacking stuff a little bit here. My understanding of how the world works is that thousands and thousands of years ago, maybe a million years ago, within the last million years, a few hundred thousand years, let's say, we started to evolve and we started to do this really weird thing called external identification. So in the old days, I think if somebody said, hey, you know, I have this feather and I really like this feather and I'm looking at it. That's a pretty cool feather. It's really beautiful. And somebody says, I don't like that feather. I wouldn't care. It wouldn't mean anything to me. But these days, if I have a feather and I have identified with it, and somebody says, I don't like that feather, it's almost like they said they don't like me, right? If somebody says, I don't like couch surfing, right? I would say, oh, did you just say you don't like me? I don't like Muse. I don't like that company, right? Whoa, what? Did you just say that about me? Right? Really? So we are identified, and it's a blessing and a curse. I mean, it's good that we externally identify because it creates diversity in the world, and it creates complex society. Modern society is built on this functionality. But it's a double-edged sword because it means we might, you know, not feel good if somebody says, I don't like your thing or, who, you know, the thing you're associated with. But in that diversity, it allows us to do all kinds of weird things like, you don't like my feather. Well, I don't like you and I don't like things that you're associated with. And now I'm crossing a land bridge to North America. See you later. Right. I'm going to travel in weird ways. I'm not just going to follow the resources that are available. So this is when we're trying to be mindful and we're trying to have peace in our lives. This is one of the things that really gets us the most, that gives us the most pain and can torment us, is what do other people think? What do they think about us? And that can be hard to overcome.
Totally. So, I mean, in the United States right now, we have a strong problem of identification and people identify politically, and that causes all sorts of rifts and all sorts of assumptions that are made at the first second about who that person is, if you like them, if you don't like them.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So I mean, to take it even further, this idea of ego hacking is really, it's this idea that we all want to have impact in the world. We want to make a better world. At least we have a model for how it might be better. But it's not enough to just have the right plan. We need to be able to have impact. It's not about the plan. It's about the person who can create the plan. Do you have the capabilities, the skills, the personality to make that plan come true or to make a good thing happen? If you don't, how do you become that? Now, if you're trapped in your family and your friends in your social circle, and you're not able to become that person, you're not even able to figure out who that person is you want to be or need to be, well, you're not going to be able to make those plans happen. So it's not the plan, it's the personality that matters.
That's interesting. So people often feel like they're trapped within a position in work and people won't see them or take them seriously.
Right.
Or they're, you know, want to become an entrepreneur, but they, you know, have a boring job and they don't know how to make the next step. They don't know how to take the risk. They don't know to go. So is ego hacking something that you've created to help people move from one, I was going to call it a place in life, but maybe it's more of a perception of the self instead of skills? become a different person with a different set of skills?
Absolutely.
Okay, tell us how to ego hack.
Yeah, so here's how to ego hack. Okay, so the idea is we become the person other people want us to be for social cohesion. We have to. You're born being tormented by what other people think. That's a great thing. That means you have empathy and compassion, and you have all of those good socially cooperative instincts. It's such a great thing for humanity because people are born and they're cooperating. They are born caring about what other people think and becoming a little bit closer to what other people want them to be. You've heard the research that says we become who the five people we hang out with are, right? I would say it's just a little different than that. It's we become what the five people we hang out with, what they want us to be, not just who they are, but what they want us to be.
So stopping to think about that, I think about, you know, my relationship with my husband, for example. Mm-hmm. Who or what does he want me to be? Am I becoming more of that? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's how our family functions more effectively.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how he gets his needs fulfilled, by me becoming what he needs me to be.
Yeah, and of course in every direction in general. Yeah.
Totally.
And so the ego hacking framework, basically it's just how does it work and how can we use that to suffer less and help the people we love more?
Okay, tell us, how does it work? How do we use it?
So if it's true that we're becoming what other people want us to be, well, naturally, it flows from there that the hack is figure out who you want to be and ask people to tell you that's how they see you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great, and this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit BetterHelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now, back to our show.
Okay.
So I have a good friend of mine. I was just trying some of this technology out. And this is like 20 years of me studying human psychology and identity and like really caring about free will. And do I have free will? And if so, how? And so on. My friend, he just had a major accident. He had a surf accident. He was in Portugal. And I went to visit him and take care of him in the recovery after he had his heart surgery. He said, I'm not getting things done. It's just driving me crazy. Can you help me? I said, well, I had this idea. So I said, okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to start to tell you that that's who I see you as. In fact, it's going to be even more powerful if I have other people tell you this as well. And it won't matter if you know what I'm doing. It won't matter. And I'll get into that reason in a minute. So what we did is we took in an email. I explained to everyone in another email, this is what we're doing. And I was like, okay, I get it. We're going to basically tell our friend that we see him as somebody's getting things done. And anytime we notice any evidence of this, we're going to say, I see that and reinforce that. And so great. So then I sent an email to my friend and all of our other friends and said, wow, he's really getting so much done. In fact, I'm kind of embarrassed. I'm not getting more things done, which is true. I was wishing I was getting more things done. And it's really amazing. And it reminds me of this article I read about getting things done. And isn't that incredible? And other friends are like, yeah, that's really great. Well, glad to hear it. That's good. Go, you know, good work. And something really weird happened. It was like a snowball. He started to notice more things about him getting things done and being efficient and productive than he had in the past. He'd start to notice the evidence. It was like we had implanted a piece of his identity. And before, he just had the identity of, I'm not getting anything done. I'm no good at this. And he'd see evidence everywhere he went of whatever is in his identity. Because we're pattern matching machines and we notice the patterns in our environment that reinforce, it's like confirmation bias, that reinforce whatever's in our identity, good or bad. So in a complex world, it's important to know what is in our identity. What is it programmed with? Because we will find more of that in a complex environment. Everywhere we go, our pattern matching neural network, as you know all about neural networks are great pattern matching machines, and they will just find whatever your identity is programmed with. So it'll notice things in your environment, but it'll give precedence to anything in the identity. It puts it up higher, right in your front of you. So just to wrap that piece up, we were our friend. I said, okay, so he started to snowball. He started to look and see all this evidence, and I started to reinforce it too. And I knew that he wanted to be that person. So anytime I'd notice any evidence at all, I'd call it out. Oh my God, you see that? That is evidence that you are that person. And then I even started to use more emotion when I'd say it, instead of saying, oh, you're really getting things done. I'd say, you're getting things done. This is great, right? And so why was I doing that? Why was I using emotion? And why was it that it would work even if he knew what I was doing? And even if the friends knew the trick, right?
The game, yeah.
Right, right. Why is that? So it just so happens, as you know, we have multiple areas of the brain. And this is we're using a very general statement that's, you know, they're not as cordoned off, I think we've known now, as like having, you know, the neocortex and the limbic system and a, you know, more reptilian system. But generally speaking, people understand them this way. So we think of, you know, system one and system two, thinking fast and slow, different models for how you want to look at this. And the system two, the slower but more deliberate intellectual brain, it is really good at thinking and communicating with other people. But our identity doesn't live there. Our identity lives more in the emotional brain. And so usually the identity is running the show. It's driving us. And then usually we rationalize what the choices we're making. You know, with our neocortex, we're rationalizing our emotions, pretending that that's really, that this thing really makes sense. But it often is, or whatever choice we made makes sense logically, but often it's just a feeling. So what was going on there? We're basically speaking to the emotional brain when I'm using emotions. Hello, yes, you're getting things done. It's incredible. Wow.
Yay, versus, we love you.
Yay. You know, I'm giving positive affirmation. And the emotional brain can't understand like language. It doesn't understand words, like specific words. It understands tonality and body language. So if I'm like, yeah, you just did the thing and I'm giving you positive response, right? Then that's what it's cueing off of. A lot of times when we're young, we're told in emotional terms, you're not enough. You're not lovable. You're not something, right? And a large portion of us have had this experience and we're suffering from not being enough. Or we have a low-level identity that everywhere we go, we're trying to make sense of the world around us. And it's really that if we're told, or if we make the meaning when we're young, I'm not enough, I'm not lovable, something like that, I'm not smart, I'll never be enough. Everything we see just reinforces that. And so if you dig into people's lives and you ask them questions like this, you start to see this. And it's just like really blowing my mind how widespread of an issue this is.
Completely agreed. I mean, I always think about the three major problems with the world today is people mm-hmm. think they are not loved, they're not safe, and they're not worthy. And if we right. could solve that problem and let everybody know that you are loved and you are safe mm-hmm. and you are worthy,
yeah.
you solve world peace. Like, you solve all yeah. the problems in humanity. And in my decade as a psychotherapist, I would have a client come into my office and I would tell them, you are worthy. And I'd say yeah. 80% would look at me and say, huh? How's that even possible?
Yeah. I don't believe you. Everything's told me that that's not the case. I don't believe you. Right?
Yeah. And I'd go back and say, well, is a baby worthy? And 95%, of course. Yes, a baby is worthy. Were you worthy as a baby? I don't think
right.
so.
right.
And so it's like this fundamental disconnect that people are fundamentally worthy.
Yeah.
Just baseline. We are human beings. Right. We have worth and people cannot feel it.
Yeah. So one of my best friends in the world, she grew up in Scandinavia and there's this thing called the law of Yanda or something. I can't remember the exact pronunciation, but it basically means you're don't think you're better than anyone. And if you do, we're going to hit you down. And it's a great thing for survival, you know, maybe through the long winters. I don't know. Everybody is super humble. And so it has its benefits, but it does have its problems too. So you can't try harder than anyone else. You don't want to stick out. You don't want to stand out. So that's a bit of an issue in certain respects, right? It's very nice for people when you're hanging out with them because they're absolutely humble and very aware of how they're interacting with other people. Good qualities. But this best friend of mine, she said, I really want to change this. Like, can you ego hack me And can I become somebody who is not tormented by what other people are thinking so much, and become a little bit more of myself and a little bit more American or North American or something like that? And I said, okay, we'll give it a shot. And so I kept telling this person, you are incredible. And I say it in emotional terms, like, you're so incredible. And so this person asked me to ego hack them. And again, because you have two different brains, the neocortex can understand this presentation, understand these words, understand this, all this logic. And you can even think, oh, well, it won't work on me because I know about it. But that's not true, because the limbic system, when I speak emotionally, when somebody speaks emotionally to you, it goes straight in. You cannot stop it. There's nothing you can do really to stop it. And that's what it, you know, advertising is. It's programming us every day and we don't understand how it's doing it. Well, ego hacking gives you the tools to understand how that's happening. And you can use this hopefully for good, because it's being used right now for all kinds of other purposes. It would be great to understand how it works and understand how you can be the person you want to be. So with this best friend of mine, like, just being emotional, saying, you're amazing. Like, I can't believe how amazing you are. And I'll just go repeatedly again and again. And finally, after about 3 months of this, this person was on an airplane and she was watching a sunset. And she said, wow, when I'm looking around and I'm seeing the meaning of these different things, I used to think I'm not enough. And the meaning would always go there. Like, that's how my mind would go. And now my mind is going to, I am enough. It was like a switch, just like a switch. Imagine it's like a neurological snowball. You've got a bundle of, you know, neurons and they're all associated with I'm not enough. It's a big story and it's big, and you're trying to make sense of the world, and you keep firing, and it keeps firing straight through this area. Well, now you're growing this evidence snowball of, you know, potential these dendritic, and they're all kind of connected, and they're you know, building up potential. And then suddenly one day it switches. And you are suddenly, it has more affinity for the new identity. That's happening. And that's what we're noticing. And that is the ultimate result of ego hacking. You use emotions to convince people's neurological networks beyond their neocortex, even it doesn't matter what their neocortex says. And you convince them that they are enough. And you change and you allow their neurons to fire into meanings that are growth mindset, like Carol Dweck stuff, about being enough and being capable of, you know, doing great things in this world and caring about other people, instead of the old programming, which is limiting and it's a diminishing mindset. And if you're programmed early on to not be enough, and everything you go, every meaning you make in the world is, I can't do that, I'm enough, it won't work, it's not for me. Well, you're going to find whatever you look for in a complex world. You could call it the secret, call it whatever you want. Somehow a neurological network is pattern matching, and you want to be very careful and understand what you're programmed with and what your identity is associated with, because positive or negative, you will find what you're looking for.
That's extremely beautiful. When you got to the story of the sunset and she recognized for the first time that she was enough, that the story didn't go to the negative place, it went to the place of fulfillment. I actually kind of started to cry. I got really choked up.
For her, it was the freedom that she experienced. And to have all of this happen with just 3 months, in 3 months of saying, hey, can you ego hack me? And then boom, to see that. And then I've had this theory that it must be like these snowballs. It's like you're building up identity snowballs. And once there's one that's bigger, the bigger meaning than the other one, it will start to fire through there. And you'll suddenly feel it just like that. Now, she did have, after that, a week later, some challenges. She wasn't sleeping enough, whatever, you know, basically lower level energy, a little depressed. And then it went back to the old one, but not for long. And once she built up and it just kept reinforcing itself, remember that it's like a reinforcing. Now she's going to find evidence everywhere she goes. The meat is going to start firing through there and it's just going to build. And she says that she just can't even imagine going back to the old way of being. It's just not possible anymore.
I think this is probably fundamentally resonating with a lot of people listening, because that sensation of, ugh, I'm not enough. Am I going to be able to accomplish? Can I do this? This is so pervasive. Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's so much my mission in life to help people understand that that doesn't need to be the way that you live.
Yeah. And the work that you're doing, helping people see their minds and getting that feedback loop on their thoughts and awareness, is beautiful.
Yeah. There's a different you underneath there. And the stories that you tell yourself are not necessarily you. And you can let go of those stories and you can be the different you. So I'm super curious. Can you be very clear about the methodology that you're using? So someone who wants to ego hack themselves, what would they do?
I would say there's active and passive ego hacking, right? So let's say you really want to just do some more active ego hacking. So what you do is you figure out who you want to be. And this can change over time, whatever. Figure out, okay, I want to be somebody. You could just pick something. I want to get more things done. I want to see myself as lovable or enough. And then you say, okay, that's what I'm working on right now. So I need to get other people around me to tell me that, because again, I'll become what they say I am more than I'll become even what I want to be. Because for social cohesion, we're social beings, and biologically, we have to become what other people say much more quickly and more efficiently than what we would say ourselves. So, okay, I want to be enough. Okay. So I'm going to actively go to my friends and say, hey, I want to be enough. I want to see myself as lovable. Can you tell me that that's who you see me as? In fact, I'll even take it a step further. I learned about this ego hacking thing. Go check it out. See how it works. Let's talk about it. And then let's do it. Let's try it out. Like, just give it a shot. So now you have somebody who's on your side, who understands kind of the methodology and is trying to work with you. And you could both help each other. Oh, you want to get more things done. I want to be enough. Great. Let's help each other reinforce that. Because so often we see those things, but we just let them pass. We don't reinforce the positive that the person's trying to be. So this gives you this framework and you start doing this. And it's like the more people you could get participating, the faster it goes. You need to build that evidence, emotional evidence snowball, neurological snowball, and it has to be bigger than the other meaning, the meaning of I'm not enough. It has to be that I'm enough has to be bigger, and then it will start firing there, and then you achieve a liftoff. You it'll just keep reinforcing itself, and you won't be firing, your brain won't be firing and seeing the old patterns.
Okay, so simple methodology.
Yep, so step one is decide that you want to do this and figure out what it is you want to become more of and that you want to be enough.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
I want to get things done, whatever the thing it is you want to be. And then get somebody else to help you. Either just tell them about it or get them to go over the materials with you and then actively practice it. So what will they be doing? They will say, you know, hey, I just noticed that somebody just left you that little note on your door. Looks like you're lovable. Looks like people really love you. Imagine, I mean, you are enough. And you don't want to have the one neocortex speaking to the other neocortex, because in that case, it's neocortex speaking to the other person's neocortex and expecting their neocortex to speak to their limbic system saying, you know, translate and say, you're enough. That doesn't work because, again, it's coming from the same source. It has to be coming from the other person. And so the more emotional you can make it, hold on to their shoulders, hold on to their hand, give them a big, give them a squeeze, look in their eyes, make your eyes bigger, whatever it is. Emotional tonality, body language, that's what you want to do. And it's that much more powerful. And if you could get other people doing this, like 5 people in a room, yeah, this person is incredible. Don't you agree? Yes, you agree too. Wow. Yes, we all agree, right? Emotionally, again. So it's that simple. Figure out what you want to be, get other people to tell you that that's what you are. And if you want to speak about the past, about, you know, not being enough or, you know, that part of you that wasn't enough, you want to get that out. Well, talk about it in the past. Well, in the past, I felt like I wasn't enough. But now I'm feeling like, you know, more and more. In the past, I heard you saying you didn't feel like you were enough. But now I think you're seeing evidence, and I'm certainly seeing evidence that you are amazing. You're incredible. And you've always been incredible. Maybe you just weren't seeing that in the past. That's the active model.
That's fantastic. And incredibly simple.
This is so simple. And so we even do this exercise where we say, what I'm going to have you say to the other person in emotional terms, just talk about their shirt, talk about what they're wearing, and basically say that you don't like it. And make it up. Like, they're wearing a red shirt. Just say, oh, your blue shirt? You have a horrible blue shirt. I can't believe it. You would wear a blue shirt like that. All right. And so you give them a whole bunch in a row. And what happens at the end? They feel horrible. Even if you know that doesn't make any sense. You're not wearing a blue shirt. You're wearing suspenders, whatever. You're wearing something completely different. You know, you're wearing a suit, jacket. Because of the tonality, you'll see that it goes straight in. Your logic doesn't matter. It's your emotions and the limbic system that hears it, and it can't tell if it's true or not. It just all goes straight in. So that proves right then and there to people, wow, this is really, really crazy. And then you give them 10 compliments in a row, and then it changes. This feeling like everybody wants to like crawl out of the room and get out of there, even though it wasn't, and nothing was true that was said. Completely invented. And then you go, all right, we're going to hit you with a bunch of positives. And it turns out that in positive psychology, maybe you've heard of this, there's something called feedback ratios. And so there's, you know, Fredrickson and Gottman and all these people that have done tests around these things. And there's something around, like, you know, one positive to one negative feedback ratio. Like, if that's your experience emotionally, that feels really bad. It feels like, you know, life is going to end. It feels like you just feel depressed, and you feel like you maybe, who knows what you want to do at that point. You want to solve that feeling. Now, if you can get yourself up to a more positive, like a two positive experiences or inputs to one negative, that's neutral. You feel okay. But if you can get yourself up to three, let's see, like four or five positives to one negative, that feels incredible. That's a thriving ratio. And if you get up to 12 positives to one negative, it feels horrible. It becomes disconnected and detached. Now, if you're in that 1-to-1 range, you have a 95% chance of divorce within a year. I think Gottman studied thousands of couples over 10 years. So people start to think it's all about, you know, somebody, my spouse said you didn't take out the trash. And if you have a low feedback ratio, you might respond with, yeah, but you bounced the check last week and I couldn't buy more trash bags. But if you have a high feedback ratio, you'd be like, yeah, you know, I just forgot. Sorry. What do you think I could do to fix that? So really, people think it's the details of what they're talking about, and they get in these tit for tat downward spirals and explode their relationship that is, you know, hard fought and won. And it's a beautiful thing, but people get wrapped up in the feedback ratio, in the details instead of the feedback ratio. I always love to say it's the feedback ratio, stupid. That's not what you're saying. It's how you're saying it. It's the ratio. So raise the ratio. What happens when you raise the ratio is that when you're in a, you know, I could say an infinite number of positive things about anybody or negative. I could, you know, just sit here all day, negative or positive, whatever. Complex world, we can do that. So make sure you modulate your ratio and keep it such that people can hear you. Biologically, if you have a low feedback ratio, you have a lot of negative, people literally can't hear what you're saying. You're like, hey, you didn't take out the trash. Their pleasure, pain, their ego, that ego machine is trying to make themselves feel better, and they want the feedback ratio to go up. So for them to even hear you and to take on that idea just lowers it, and it creates more pain. And as we know, the pain, when you have ego pain, it's straight into the amygdala. You could take ibuprofen to, like, you know, dull in that social pain. But social pain is a real thing. And feedback ratios and identity and ego, like all of this stuff, it's real, really, really, really real. And if you want to get somebody to hear you, you don't want to be giving them so much negative that they can't. You want to give them enough positive in your everyday life. So when you need to say something like, hey, you need to take out the trash, or hey, I'm not feeling enough love from you today, or something, if they have enough positive and they're in that thriving range, they've got enough of a buffer, or you've got enough ego banking, as it's called, to actually hear somebody.
I'm sure there's lots of people who are wishing that their partner would listen to this little bit, and their partner would change the number of positive to negative responses, or their parent.
Yeah.
Or their boss.
I used to notice I'd get myself, you know, I needed to be right. But because it was like my feedback ratio, if it was low, or if I was creating a low feedback ratio of somebody else, I would not understand like why this relationship is not working. And I would start thinking more about the details instead of just raising the ratio. When I would raise the ratio, magically things would happen, fix. You know, when you're in an argument with somebody, then somebody finally just you know, says, oh, I'm sorry. I guess I could have, I found the trash bags in the other bathroom or something. I'm like, oh, it's okay. Cause you know, I probably shouldn't have exploded like that. Yeah. And then once somebody gives in, basically what they're doing is they're saying they're changing the ratio. And when they change the ratio, then the other person feels instantly something different. And then they're like compelled to act in a very different way toward you. So this is part of ego hacking.
So I have a question that I think might be on some people's minds.
Sure.
And that is, you're somebody, you want to change, you want it to be different, but it's actually even scary to go and ask somebody in your life to do this for you or with you. Even that can be a scary thing. How do you overcome that step?
Well, that's a great question, because then now you're in a prison of your own mind. You can't, you know, it's too scary to go and talk to someone. Well, you can start with yourself. You can start to say to yourself, I see myself as somebody who is less and less scared to talk to people every day. In fact, I see myself as more and more confident and loving every day. I'm feeling more and more compassionate every day. You can work on yourself to do that. You can have the self-talk, the ego hacking with yourself. It's not as powerful as other people doing it with you, but it can eventually have its ability to help. So you can do that, but then eventually, you know, you really want to branch out to be able to get other people to help you. Now you could do it with somebody you don't have as much stake with. You could say to someone, hey, I don't know, would you go check out this link and let me know what you think? Yeah. Just check out that ego hacking thing. What do you think about that? Then you don't have to have any fear. Just check it out. Let me know what you think. And if they come back and say, well, that's a pretty cool thing. I like that idea. Now you can say, oh, I like that idea too. What do you think? Maybe you want to try it.
Do you want to go on an ego hacking date with me, maybe?
Right. Yeah. You want to go on an ego hacking? You want to go get some coffee and talk ego hacking? But you can also do it passively. So here's how you can do ego hacking passively without even letting anyone know you're doing it. It's pretty simple. So let's say someone says, "Wow, good job getting that paper done." No, they're talking about something about getting things done, and that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to get more things done. Or let's say they said, "Wow, oh, I love you. Yeah, I really appreciate what you've done here." What you can do is emotionally say to them, turn around, look at them emotionally. Really? You think so? I'm so glad that you said that. That really means a lot for me. It really gives me the energy to keep trying hard and doing that. You really believe that? Yeah, you do? Great. Thank you so much for that feedback. Now, you've just ego hacked them back. You basically just said, in a way, I really appreciate you saying that. And so what are they going to do in the future?
Say that more.
Say that more. Just really emotionally thank them. Instead of saying, thank you so much for that feedback, I really appreciate that. That's one neocortex talking to another. It doesn't have a powerful effect. Hey, thanks. Great. I really appreciate that you doing that. Whatever. And, you know, and I'm over dramatizing for this video a little bit. I mean, you got to keep it real. It's got to be, you know, not annoying and weird. You want it to just, you know, use a bit of emotion and thank them. And then they will feel inclined and inspired to continue to do that. So it becomes a virtuous loop, a feedback cycle. And that's how you can do it passively.
So one could take this information, which is amazing. This is so incredibly simple and such an amazingly powerful way to build relationships, build reinforcement, and bring out the best in one another. And, you know, it's obvious hearing this that you can then apply this to all sorts of people in your life and give them reinforcement to help bring out the best.
Right.
You could also probably try to continue to shape them to who or what you want to be. You want them to be. But that's not the goal. This goal is to understand what somebody else's needs are, somebody else's desires for themselves, and in partnership with them, help and support who they want to become.
Absolutely. I always call it ethical ego hacking, is you figure out what other people want to be and you help them become that. It's that simple. And you can, you know, other people, different people's ethics may vary, I guess, a little bit. Like some people may take a little bit more, I don't know. They might just decide, okay, I'm really sure that this person wants to be enough. And even if I haven't 100% confirmed that, you know, I'm going to confirm it to some degree. I'm going to say, it sounds like you really, you know, really want to be loved. It sounds like you really appreciate love. Is that true? And I say, yeah, that's actually very true. Very true. Great. Thanks for confirming that, because I see you as somebody who's extremely loved and worthy of love. You can ask for clarification and permission in different ways. So I think that to me is so important. I mean, you want to be certain that you're ego hacking people in the direction that they want to go. And I would advocate for more explicit and overt permission and awareness as possible.
Well, this is a really beautiful methodology with a really beautiful goal. So if you are somebody who feels like you are not enough, there's a simple methodology that really can help you feel more. And yeah. I think so often we believe that because we feel some way, it must be true. And so there's this confirmation bias about ourselves and how we exist in the world that we just assume that because we think we're not enough, therefore that must be true. The way that we feel must right. be the way it is. And as we learn in meditation and all of these practices and all of the world of psychotherapy and positive psychology, that is not the case. You know, our thoughts right. and self-perceptions are lying to us, and there really is the possibility for you to be another way, or you may already be this other way, and there are lots of methods that can help you uncover that.
Right. Absolutely. And suffer less, and then have the capacity to help other people along their paths of less suffering, hopefully. I mean, I think what you said about the world, there's, you know, a few big problems in the world. And I think one of these problems, and it comes down to, you know, sustainability, and it comes down to nation states, you know, arguing over stupid things. A lot of it is ego debt. It's people don't understand how their egos work, and they don't understand how their egos are affecting them and large groups of people.
My greatest wish in life is for everybody to deeply know that they are enough and they are lovable.
Yeah.
And if everybody listening can take 1 second and take it in, Casey and I are going to tell you passionately right now, just going straight into your ears, you are enough.
You are enough. You are lovable. And there's evidence everywhere around you that shows you this. Just the fact that you're listening to this podcast right now shows that you care about these things and you care about people. You care about a better world. The evidence is everywhere. And you, if you in the past may have gotten thinking about that you're not enough or kind of were told that, it's just a story. And it's just an identity snowball that got a little big in the past, and now you have a new snowball. And as you go through the next day of your life, you're probably going to notice something that's going to reinforce the fact that you are enough. And that snowball will grow, and you will start to change, and you will start to see this. And you and everybody, every time you see someone or you interact with somebody and they say to you something that reaffirms this, you're going to say, thank you so much for saying that. Thank you for telling me that, because I'm really working on remembering that I am enough. And this helps me remember that. And as time goes on and the months go by and you see more and more evidence of this, someday it'll surprise you. It'll just come down like a ton of bricks. It'll just, you'll be watching a sunset, something. You'll be somewhere thinking about yourself, and you'll be instantly surprised about the fact that you are enough, and you'll know it and you'll feel it in your intuition. So yes.
Amazing. Feel free to go back and rewind the last couple minutes and listen to that over and over and over again. Anybody listening, because it is so fundamentally true. You are enough.
Yeah, absolutely. So true.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you for this beautiful piece of knowledge, this very helpful technique.
I mean, it's really hard to make a better world when we're all just trying to survive and we're worried if we're not enough. If we are enough, then basically we have one of our most important basic needs met, that of identity. And when that's met, we're no longer tormented and distracted by it. We have the extra capacity to help others and to make this world the world it needs to be for us to survive.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much for letting us inside your head, inside your heart, and helping us understand a little bit more about each of our egos and how we can begin to repair them.
Thank you so much.
Well, I bet you never knew you might have wanted to be ego hacked. So there are some extremely useful techniques to try with you and your friends. If you want to learn more about Casey and his work, you can get him at caseyfenton.com. That's CaseyFenton.com. If you're looking for a deck that walks you through what ego hacking is and how to do it, you can find it at bit.ly/egohacking. That's bit.ly/egohacking. My name's Arielle Garten. If you're looking for the full version of this podcast, you can see it in video form and all its amazing colors with lots more content at ariellegarten.com. And if you're curious about Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate, you can find it at choosemuse.com and use the code Untangle 15. Have an amazing week and keep your neurons sparkling.